And welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Zaira Garcia and Amber Sobotsly, activists and organizers. I met Amber and Zaira at the Pelham's Women's March in this past January, and it was the first ever Petaluma's Women's March. I received an email from Zaira asking me to, if I wanted to speak, and I gladly accepted. And after meeting the both of them, I learned that they are activists and organizers in so many other ways. And so we want to welcome Zaira and Amber to the show. Welcome you two.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And before we get to learn more about Amber and Zaira, here's news and events from Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Muralia.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
This is Greg Muralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of May 5th, 2019. An entire confirmation class at First United Methodist Church in Omaha, Nebraska, announced to their congregation that they've decided not to become members due to the church's stance on LGBTQ issues. The teenaged would-be members read an open letter in front of the congregation to explain why they couldn't support discrimination despite the church's recent controversial decision to crack down on LGBTQ clergy and marriage equality. They wrote, quote, "We have spent the years learning about our faith and clarifying our beliefs. Most of us started the confirmation year assuming that we would join the church at the end. But with the action of the General Conference in February, we're disappointed about the direction the United Methodist denomination is heading." And they added, quote, "We're concerned that if we join at this time, we'll be sending a message that we approve of this decision," end quote. Churches around the nation protested the anti-LGBTQ stance after the General Conference of the United Methodist Church voted to reaffirm their teachings that homosexuality is incompatible with Christianity and to punish individual churches that perform marriages for same-sex couples and allow LGBT clergy. The eight teenagers received a standing ovation from the congregation for their decision to stand up for Christian values in the face of systemic discrimination. And the Trevor Project here in California is expanding its services by opening up their 24-hour chat and text counseling service. The organization's been fighting LGBTQ youth suicide with a hotline since 1998. Their phone line is already available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but they previously only offered text and chat support from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. But with financial help from AT&T, the Trevor Project will be better able to reach young people today, people who grew up with smartphones. The Trevor Project cites a third-party evaluation of its services that found that 63% of young people who use its text and chat services did so because they felt like it was easier to be themselves. And finally, in West Virginia, Vice Principal Lee Livinggood is back on the job after he demanded a transgender teenager pee in front of him last year. The Harrison County School Board of Education in West Virginia voted to reinstate Livinggood after he appealed the decision to remove him. Last month, the same board voted not to renew his contract for next year after its 3-year probationary period ends. The board did not say that their decision to not renew his contract was at all related to the incident with the transgender student. This happened last year with student Michael Critchfield, a 15-year-old transgender boy who was simply trying to use the restroom. Livinggood blocked him in and said, quote, "Why are you in this bathroom? You shouldn't be here," end quote. And then he allegedly told the teen to come out and use the urinal to prove that he could be in the boy's restroom. Another adult intervened, and Livinggood replied, quote, "I'm not going to lie, you freak me out," end quote. Following the incident, Livinggood was suspended for a month and wrote a note that said, quote, "I'm deeply sorry for raising my voice while in the bathroom. I promise it won't happen again," end quote. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Muralia.
I love to change the world. But I don't know what to
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diane and Sheridan, and I'm Sheridan. And in studio, we have Amber Sabotsly. Amber, say hi.
Hi, everyone.
This is so everyone can hear your voice and how it's different than Zyra. And we have Zyra Garcia. Hi, Zyra.
Hello.
Hello.
So welcome, both of you. We really want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be with us tonight. Mm-hmm.
So let the audience hear about you a little bit more. So Zyra, you say you would start to share a little bit more about who you are?
Sure. Again, hi, everyone. My name is Zyra Garcia, pronouns she, her. I am a woman of color, and I have two little ones. I'm also a mother. I currently live in Petaluma and am a community activist. So parent by day and all day community organizer.
And you're married, correct?
Oh, that is correct. I am married to my lovely wife, Chelsea. Hi.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Amber Sobosly. I also live in Petaluma, and my main gig is a scientist, but my alter ego is an activist. And that's kind of how Zyra and I met, is through some of the social justice work that we've come up against in Petaluma. I am married, and I have an 8-year-old son who's listening tonight, I hope. Hi. He's going to share it show and tell tomorrow at school that we were on the radio tonight. He's really excited.
Oh, how special. Wonderful. So let's start in the beginning, from the beginning where I met you. So how did you come up with the decision or the desire to do the Women's March? I mean, it was incredible.
I think we saw it as a really rich opportunity to bring some new energy to Petaluma, and to really curate a set of speakers that people would turn out and be inspired by. And through the work that we did together in putting that program together, I think, you know, that was what motivated us, was that there was this chance to get out there and bring together a wonderful group of speakers to move the community.
Yeah, and I really want to actually give credit to Ellen, who started the idea within our Indivisible Petaluma page and basically asked for permission, or is anybody doing it in Petaluma? We're like, no, go for it. And that's when we jumped in as part of the planning committee, because like Amber said, it was definitely a opportunity from what you hear from the Women's March. But we wanted to give a platform for mainly women of color and LGBTQ, basically folks who don't usually get the mic. They don't usually get the spotlight. And we wanted to highlight what was within Petaluma. So I felt like that was very important. And that was the main drive of, I want to create platforms for those who don't always get the voice.
Wow.
And that was actually, you know, one of our requirements was to have it be people from Petaluma, because there's this desire to bring in, you know, bigger names maybe from other places. But for us, we want to know who those people are in our community so that we can lift them up and they can lead the way a little, because they have amazing things to say. So.
Well, I was really impressed with the both of you and all the organizers. I mean, it was really an incredible day. I mean, I still talk about it with Cher. It's just power. It was powerful, and so many turned out for it.
People still talk about it till this day, to be quite honest. There's a lot of movement within our school board where folks were really plugged in because they listened to the two young women.
Three
young students. And people were just kind of shook.
Well, what did they say?
Well, we had Cash, who's non-binary, and they talked about the lack of resources for LGBTQ youth. They brought up issues about suicide rates within the LGBTQ community.
Within Petaluma?
Well, there have been, they brought up that there was an issue. I believe they were close to one of their peers who committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And then there was a Deja, who was the president of the Black Student Union. And that, I think, was...
Ooh. Oh, yeah, that was really deep. I mean, this young woman got to the mic and people consoled her and held her, but she was like passionate about the discrimination and the racism and mm-hmm. Oh, she was preaching to the people like, how do you're supposed to be adults, you're supposed to protect me, you're supposed to protect us. She just went on and on. It was just like, I was crying. Everybody was just so moved and touched. She was so courageous to speak so truthfully and honestly like that, you know?
It was stunning, the whole thing. I mean, I think that's what you're talking about, is that people are still talking about it today because they heard this and they want to do something. Mm-hmm. They're ready to take some action. Mm-hmm. And that's what we really, we wanted it to be more than just a march. We mm-hmm. wanted to inspire people to take action.
Mm-hmm. And they did. I think a good example would be there are a few parents who mobilized and now are called Tide. I need to remember what the acronym stands
for. Oh, I got you.
Go ahead.
Team for Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity.
Wow.
Yeah. And so what they do is they set meetings from different schools with principals, superintendents, teachers, and they just sit down and be like, well, what are you doing to make our schools more inclusive and welcoming for our students?
That is so huge. Wow.
And Teens for Inclusion, Diversity, and...
It's a team with an M.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And it's run. It was started by Paige Green, who was the photographer at the Women's March.
Oh yeah.
She took those amazing, incredible black and white photographs mm-hmm. of all the speakers. And she heard the youth speaking, and it just moved her to do something. And what's most interesting about it, I think, is that the goal is to have someone as a representative at each of the schools mm-hmm. in Petaluma. And one of the things that we've seen as we've started to dig into what's going on in education in the town is that we have a lot of different school districts, and it's really hard to figure out what's in place at any given school or district. And so if there's some like issue that we're worried about, like we talk a lot about the FAIR Act, and I'll let you talk more about that, but there's not like one overarching guideline telling the schools what to do. And so what's happening is they're all coming together when they get to high school, and they haven't had the same kind of guidelines or rules or curriculum. And then they're thrown into high school, and there's sort of different standards and different ways of coping with things. And as we know from listening to the youth, there's a lot of problems with discrimination and representation.
Well, I just want to just say thank you to the both of you for even the foresight of saying, hey, we want to set up a platform for people who are not usually on the stage and speaking, you know, because of, you know, the diversity part of it. I really thank you and appreciate that, because I hear, you know, I'm a therapist in Petaluma, and I hear stories and different people talk about, you know, the racism that goes on, and it's just kind of under the cover, under the rug, you know, nobody's talking about it, especially at Petaluma High. I know about Petaluma High, so Casa Grande probably too.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we know.
Based on what Deja was saying,
yeah.
There's definitely a denial of racism, I'd like to say, in Petaluma, mm-hmm. where people just don't want to talk about it, mm-hmm. but it's happening, mm-hmm. and I think that was part of that day. We broke the bubble of this perfect town, but it's not perfect for all of us. Mm. And it's certainly not perfect for families like mine, queer families. Mm. So I think I should say that I'm very proud of what we did and what's happening now. 'Cause there's definitely pieces, there's momentum there where things are changing. The messages that were left behind or weren't talked about are being talked about. Mm.
So you mentioned the school board, and you were saying that's like a not fallout, but a continuation of the march is in the school board. What other organizations or how else have you seen people take the message forward?
Well, there is also another organization, the Petaluma Community Relations Council. They also held an event where they got together and they brought in speakers who were former students of Casa Grande told their stories of what they encountered back in the day, which nothing has changed. They also got together superintendents, principals to come in, and then the community, folks like us, were invited and to kind of sit around and kind of brainstorm what's going on, what can we do better. So were you there?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What would you call that? Like
it was a forum. You know, there was an opportunity for people to speak, but there was also an opportunity to break out in smaller groups. And there's a pretty good distribution of superintendents and principals sitting within groups talking about, I think, you know, what are you worried about as a, you know, in your role as a parent or an administrator?
Or students, because students also were there. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to at least participate and give feedback or other experience. Another thing I would say is we had an opening for a school board due to unfortunate events because Frank Lynch had passed away. We ended up getting 16 applicants, 16 to apply for that seat. Mm. And even I think the superintendent made a comment that he's never seen that many before, ever. Hmm. So I think even with that number, people are paying attention.
Mm-hmm. And some of the other work that we do so we're co-chair for the North Bay Organizing Project's Petaluma Table. So that's the social justice work that we do. I sort of lost my thought. You want to say something about NBOP?
So with that, we actually also collaborate with the Latinx Student Congress of Sonoma County. And they also have been organizing their peers. They've been doing phone banking. We actually worked on them for the school board forum when the candidates in 2018, it was election cycle. So that there were three seats that were up.
Mm-hmm.
And the incumbents were running again, and that's where we were able to get Joanna Pond, Caitlin Quinn, and Maddie Cloud,
and
create a forum to get all six candidates to come and basically ask questions that we formed with the Latinx Student Congress. So the students participated, and they were the main front and center, because they're students. They're the ones that, based on whoever's going to be elected, policies are going to affect them. You know, it's important that they have a voice. Mm-hmm. It's important that they raise the issues that are happening. So that was something that I thought was pretty cool, to collaborate with youth during that school board forum.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we work on in the community, is bringing together, you know, a more progressive forum for people to ask questions. These types of like opportunities in politics where we're not necessarily pushing an agenda, but we do get to choose what the questions are. And so we can ask the hard questions that people might not ask at the sort of more mainstream community forums that are going to be hosted, or we can bring in the Latinx Student Congress and collaborate with them in a way that lifts up their voices.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, we didn't beat around the bush for the questions.
Yeah.
We asked the real questions of, what are you doing about representation and staff? What are you doing about the disciplinary? Because at that point, the numbers in discipline, specifically with youth of color, were high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing it? Like, what is the issue there? I think it was really great that we...
So was that part of your research, to get that information? How many suspensions, how many expulsions?
That was more you. I worked on the city council forum more, actually, so...
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was definitely more of the research that
Do you have some kind of ratio of white versus people of color? I'm just curious, like in Petaluma.
I don't remember the ratio. Mm-hmm. I just know that specifically in elementary schools.
Elementary?
The percentage was high versus their white counterparts.
Wow.
I'm happy to forward that information as well.
And speaking of representation, you know, we're having a really high turnover right now in Petaluma schools. We have both high school principals are moving on. So they're going to be hiring new principals at both of those schools and one of the middle schools. And so this is the type of thing where we see it as an opportunity mm-hmm. to improve representation. We don't know if that's going to happen, but we're hoping that by bringing representation to the better representation on the school board, that we'll start to see that affect what's going on in the schools.
Do you have any idea why the turnover? Is it because of you two?
Oh, there's an article about it. One of them is moving to Alaska, and the other one is going back to school, I think. But, I mean, you can, read into that. Yeah, I wouldn't know what to say exactly, but I do see it as an opportunity. Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, Zaira, you mentioned earlier about some kind of discrimination in the queer community that you've felt. Did I misunderstand?
No,
have
it's
you been.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, I mean, my appearance. You know, and that's something that I spoke about at the Women's March was that let's redefine what a woman looks like. Mm. Because I don't have long hair. I wear baseball caps. I have short hair. Maybe I'm not very, I don't have these feminine qualities. So for me, specifically more in Petaluma, since I've moved 3-4 years ago now, going to the bathroom has been an issue where women mistake me as a man going into the women's bathroom. And I'll turn around and it'll be like, oh, sorry. So that to me, I think, is still the lack of exposure, I think, with the not having enough, I guess, LGBTQ presence. Mm-hmm. Because you go to San Francisco, I can go to the bathroom, no one cares. No one blinks an eye of which bathroom I'm using. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a difference between going in the city and here in Petaluma.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, thank you for that. So I want to know, and I think the audience wants to know, because I asked your age a little bit earlier, but you're not over 40 yet. I know.
That's not right.
Oh, you don't tell your age?
I am over. I'm 43.
Oh, really? Wow, yeah. You look really great.
Yes.
I'm saying this because how did you start this? What made you want to be an activist and to do all the organizing that you do? I mean, I want to applaud you again and again and again. So did you start 5, 6, 7?
Gosh. I mean, you know, I went to this college that was very liberal, and I mean, I just learned so much about social justice, and then I kind of followed my heart to be a scientist, and there was no opportunity for those two things to collide in the path that I took. You know, I was studying kind of hard science. And a few years ago, I work on climate change with my research. So a few years ago, I started to feel like my science wasn't very meaningful anymore, even though I worked really hard to collaborate with people who weren't scientists and get my research out in the world and that kind of thing. I started to have this panic because as a scientist, I knew that climate change was coming and fast and hard. It was coming fast and hard. And I started to believe that it didn't really matter the research that I did anymore because it wasn't about whether or not climate change is true or how it's going to affect things. I just started to see that we could no longer make our predictions in a useful way because things are changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. So whereas before maybe we felt pretty confident about what was coming, now we're starting to see things like these heat waves that are making kelp forests disappear and, you know, affecting fisheries. And I just started to realize that to make change in the world, I needed to do something besides just the science. Mm-hmm. And I'd always had this kind of social justice at the core. But I think that that revelation is what sort of brought me back into the world of being an activist. And I wouldn't say that my activism is related to climate change at all. It just brought me back to working with people and like being worried about what's happening to people in mm-hmm. my community that aren't being treated fairly or aren't getting their needs met, their basic needs met. So, and more recently, climate change has kind of worked back into the activism. And maybe that's a harder piece for me as a scientist, because activism, like, it can be very complicated to be an activist and a scientist. Mm-hmm.
So, as far as social justice and your background, is there any kind of connection there as far as any kind of wounding in your
history? Oh, yeah. Well, I think definitely the Me Too movement has been really motivational for me as a way to see a community of women bringing their voices together to speak up about the wrongs that have happened to them. And certainly in a very minimal way, but not to discredit it, but as a scientist, I've definitely experienced a lot of discrimination as a woman. Mm-hmm. Now, I wouldn't say that's not like my Me Too piece, but I definitely, like, it's very easy for me to look at how women are discriminated against in, like, in movies or, you know, in these mainstream Me Too movements, and also in the scientist world. So we have Me Too STEM for scientists. Mm. And I certainly have a handful of experiences as a woman in science. Mm. And then other experiences that I won't go into on the radio. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that is a piece of, I mean, that's certainly what motivated me to work on the Women's March, mm-hmm. I would say.
And Zara? What got you started?
Basically who I am in my existence. My family and I, we crossed the border illegally. So I was also undocumented for 24 years of my life. And then when Obama did the DACA, that's when I was able to apply for at least a working permit. Of course, I am also a lesbian. Marriage was provided by a law. It wasn't just given. and, you know, it probably wasn't, my activism didn't start. I honestly didn't know I had power or a voice to even do something about it. It wasn't until my firstborn was born. Pius, who is 3 years old, and we moved to Petaluma, and this was during the 2016 election, where I woke up the next day crying, because I said my life is literally on the lines now. Mm-hmm. Anything, just like a snap, can be taken away. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started finding groups online to see what can I do. Because there was something in me that it's like I can no longer just stand still or not do anything. That's how I got involved. It started out a group of folks were gathering signatures for Petaluma to become a sanctuary city. It won't happen here was what was happening. And I met folks. And then folks got to know me and my story, and they're like, hey, can you share your story to city council? And that's how it all began. Mm-hmm. And since then, I don't think I've stopped.
Wow. That's fantastic, Zara. Mm-hmm.
Just because from then on, I think it's important to know that doesn't matter if you can't vote, doesn't matter if you're undocumented, doesn't matter just anything of your identity, you have the power to move people, those who can vote, those who, you know, are citizens and can register to vote. Mm-hmm. You can definitely make noise mm-hmm. by just standing up and being a voice for others.
Well, welcome to Petaluma.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, both of you.
This is a good time to take our music break. And you would like a song played, Zyra, for our music break. So could you introduce it?
I will. It's Sam Smith, Dancing with a Stranger. Enjoy.
Welcome back. That was Sam Smith. What was the name of that song again?
Dancing with a Stranger.
And why did you bring that tonight?
You know, I love Sam Smith. I also love that he came out as gender fluid. And his voice is just so angelic.
Mm-hmm.
I just love Sam Smith.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed while the song was playing, you're dancing over there. Great.
So gender fluid. And you introduce yourself as she, her.
Correct.
Zyra. So I'm curious about your own personal story. How old are you?
I am 30 years old.
All right. So can you kind of give us a little bit of personal history about how you came to be married to a woman, how you came to be a parent to two children? Your oldest is 3, so how old is your youngest?
18 months.
18 months. So yeah, can you give us a little history about who
you
are?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to. I actually knew I was into girls at the age of 5. Mm. And why I remember this is because I had a crush on Natalie Lopez. And I always, at recess, remember this red wagon and just always wanted to just push her around. And I don't know. It was just, I just knew. And since then, I remember just as I grew up, just having crushes here and there on girls. And I've always wanted to be their boyfriend. Like, I'd imagine myself their ideal boyfriend. but I didn't necessarily come out until 18. Mm-hmm. I think this was after I graduated high school. And I was talking to a girl online. And I felt like it was probably time for me to come out. I was scared because at the moment I lived in Buford, Georgia, and it was the Bible Belt. Mm. So I was definitely in the church. You know, my father was a deacon, so I was a daughter of a deacon. I was also baptized. So in a spiritual sense, I was struggling. And I remember telling my mom, you need to sit down because I got to tell you something. So she sat down in my room and I said, I'm gay. And she goes, oh, I already knew. And I'm like, oh, well, that's good to know. She's like, yeah, on your dad's side, your great aunt is also gay and your great uncles are also gay. And I'm like, oh, that would have been nice information to have because the teenage years were definitely a struggle for me. I was trying to figure out why me. I definitely was into depression. I had suicidal thoughts, and I was really struggling with my sexual orientation as a teenager, and to also believe in the faith that I was, you know, around. It was hard. And I remember my mom, after she told me, she's like, well, God still loves you. Hearing my mom tell me that she loves me, but that also God loves me, I guess at that moment in time, I can tell you it was impactful because for so long I just had a burden. Mm. And she even said, I've seen you try. I've seen you try to go on dates with boys. I see you try. God sees you trying, and it's okay. And that was a huge relief. That didn't mean that she approved my lifestyle, though. She loved me, but she didn't support the lifestyle. Because any time I'd bring up, oh, are you going to come to my wedding? She'd be like, you know what? We don't have time to talk about this right now. So it did, over the course of the years, took time for my parents to come around. And I'm very thankful that I had that support from them. And I, you know, because other folks aren't as fortunate. But they came around. Mm-hmm. And they are the best grandparents to my kids anyone could ever ask for. Because I think that was a fear, you know, when you're 18. And you don't think that you could get married. You don't think that you would ever have kids. I just never imagined my life ever believing that I could marry a woman. And that's when I moved to San Francisco in 2011. Met my wife in the Castro at Q Bar. She actually asked me if I wanted another drink, and then we went up to the bar, and that's how we started. And since then, we dated. In 2014, we got married. We actually eloped in Catalina Island because organizing a huge wedding was just kind of a headache for both of us. And then my son was born in 2015.
So you met in 2014 and...
2011.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that.
No, okay. No worries. 2011, we met in the Castro. 2014, we eloped.
Okay.
2015, Pius was born. Okay. So it's been a very an incredible journey. I wouldn't take my experiences for, you know, for granted. I don't regret anything. I'm glad that the path that I chose, when I chose to come out, how I choose to live, it's been a very long journey, but I'm very happy at where I'm at now. So
I'm curious to ask, Zaire, when did you start wearing your baseball caps? Was that in high school or 18 when you graduated? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no.
You know, your mom saw you trying, right?
Right. So goodness. Yeah, before I dressed in, you know, skirts, dresses, I wore makeup because I was trying, you know, but it wasn't me. I had long hair. I started wearing baseball caps. I think the most exciting thing that I have to say, the moment that when I moved to San Francisco, was I was able to cut my hair short. I decided to cut my hair. And I had no idea what style it should be, but I just told the person who was cutting my hair, just cut it short. She did a phenomenal job. I wish I can't get that now, but it was cut short, and I looked at myself and I'm like, this is me. Mm. You know, it felt so right where that, I didn't miss my long hair. And you know, it comes with, I just like wearing baseball caps since I cut my hair short.
And do you always wear them backwards?
With the
bill down your neck?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't do the front thing. Mm-hmm. I can't do it.
Well, you look cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Amber. Amber has a second coming out story. Let's talk about the first one first.
Okay, the first one. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to go after Zaire. Wow, what a story.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've heard it, so I feel like really privileged to know everything now. and it's kind of amazing because we are so busy together, we don't get to know the details of our lives. And to hear someone say, like, oh, I always knew since I was 5. Mm. I'm like, oh, yeah. And her name was Sharon Donaldson in my case, right? Mm. Like, I always knew that I liked girls and boys. And it, like, was a secret for a long time. I remember being in middle school. And so I'm dating myself here, but I went to see Top Gun with Tom Cruise. And everyone, like all my middle school friends are like, Tom Cruise. And I don't know the actress's name because I'm like a science nerd, right? I can't keep track of popular culture, but whoever she was, I was like, oh yeah, I can pretend that Tom Cruise is who I was attracted to, but really it was the chick. Like, and then, so I sort of, like, I guess, yeah, I always knew that that was an interest of mine. And then in high school, I had boyfriends, but it wasn't like Zaire describes. Like, I didn't have to work at it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed my relationships. Of course, like, the boy that I went to prom with turned out to be gay.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you know, whatever. We were like growing up at that time. And I mean, I had the same experience when I turned 18. I cut my hair really short. But I didn't have that, like, this is me. I just had that, like, yeah, sometimes I want my hair to be short. And sometimes I don't. Like, sometimes that's the way I want to look. And sometimes I miss having my long hair. You know, like, I've always owned my long hair. And then by the time, so at this point, like, I had messed around with girls, I had had boyfriends, and by the time I went to college, I went far from home. Like, I just went, like, as far as I could get. 3,000 miles was about as far as I needed to go. And then it still wasn't really, it wasn't an issue because the school was so liberal. It was just like, you could be whatever you wanted to be. Mm. So after being there for a few years, I had a friend come up to me and be very casually, Amber, do you like girls? Like, she was asking for a friend or something. Like, who is this Amber? We can't tell. Like, who she is. And so I just was this mystery, apparently. And I was just like, yes, I do. And, you know, then it became known, like, on campus that that's how it was. But I was really outside of my, like, family circle. So the coming out the first time wasn't really like a family experience. It wasn't for them to like participate in or share in, and they didn't care really. So my family is pretty supportive. So by the time I finally told them, they were just like, "All right, cool, no big deal." So I mean, like really different. Like I have no religious upbringing or anything. So really different background. So that was the first. It doesn't really count, right? Like
It's an acknowledgement that you're not straight. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just different.
Yeah. Well, totally.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. You know what I mean. Yeah. I know. I totally know what you mean. But I didn't have to come to terms with it in this way. Like, mm-hmm. I am 100% of the time different than the heterosexual world, because half the time I'm the same. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of people like me. And I think of that in Petaluma too. Like, there are all these moms out there that I think have had girlfriends, but I can't really tell. And they're not necessarily talking about it, because now, like, the way we present, we're married to men and we've had children with men. Mm-hmm. So it's, unless I say otherwise, I'm just like a regular heterosexual in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but that leads to the second coming out story, which is, after college, I went back to grad school to be a scientist, and I started experiencing discrimination just for being a woman. Like, I had one professor tell me that I was struggling too much, and I should probably just get married and have kids, because I wasn't going to be a scientist.
What year was that?
Wow.
That was 2003. Mm. Yeah. What a message. Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of a breakdown when that happened, but I definitely got a strong message that, like, my identity as a woman was something to hold me back in the minds of many people. And so based on that and, you know, other experiences I won't go into the details of, I realized that I wasn't comfortable being very open about my sexuality. Like, especially professionally, right? Because here I was already being judged for my gender. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to add another layer to it of, oh, and by the way, like, I like women and men. And so and at that point too, I was already dating my husband. So I presented as this heterosexual, and it needed no explanation. Mm-hmm. So I just went with it. And then last year, I think it was last year, there was a group formed called 500 Queer Scientists. Hmm. And I think it started with Coming Out Day. Like, it coincided with Coming Out Day. They launched this big program, which is basically a website. And it has profiles of people who are scientists who are not straight. Hmm. And it's so wonderful, because just like a little blurb. And they talk about the awesome work that they do as scientists. And I was just like, that's me. I'm writing mine. And I'm going to, like, blast it all over social media so that people know that we exist as scientists. And so that's my second coming out, was on that website, 500 Queer Scientists. Mm-hmm. I think that's my second coming out. Yeah.
That was your second.
Yeah. She was there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So, and then it's been kind of liberating, because I had really, like, having a kid and presenting as heterosexual, I've been kind of questioning, like, how do you come out to your kid when it's not really obvious that that's the case? I mean, it's a little obvious, because there's naked ladies everywhere at my house.
There's what?
Naked ladies. Like, we have art with naked ladies in them, and I don't think most houses have that. Like, I'm looking at Zyra.
No.
Yeah. No? Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So it's been really helpful in that regard, because it's given me a chance to be a little bit more outward about my sexual identity in a way that I hadn't been for 15 years as a scientist. And I got kind of comfortable and used to it and out of touch with what it's like to, you know, like when I was dating women, to just be confident about being out, holding hands or kissing in public or that kind of thing. And I've had this sort of comfortable lifestyle since I married a man, where that's not hard for me anymore in that way. So. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, I looked up Top Gun.
Oh.
And the co-star with Tom Cruise was Kelly McGillis.
Yes, Kelly McGillis.
So I've never seen her. I've never seen her, but I can understand how you'd have a crush on her. Oh, I would totally have a crush on her, too.
And isn't Tom Cruise gay anyway?
Huh?
Isn't Tom Cruise gay anyway?
I don't know. Is he?
No,
I don't know.
Okay. That's definitely misinformation there, Amber.
Okay, sorry. It's spreading rumors.
Yeah. You probably weren't the only girl that had a crush on Kelly McGillis.
Let's talk more about her, yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's been really great getting to know both of you. Thank you so much for coming. We have a couple more minutes. I'd say probably more like 5 minutes. Okay. And so you each have an opportunity to give some words of wisdom to our listeners. Anything you want somebody out there to know. It could be about science. It could be about coming out. It could be how one identifies himself in life. It could be about being a parent and raising children to be open. I mean, I don't know what you want to say, but...
If there's something that we missed that you feel like it's important to share, yeah, go ahead. So you got about 2.5 each.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be pretty brief. I think for me, the most important thing, or the best, you know, wisdom or advice, whatever you want to call it, is don't wait for somebody else to make change for you. You have to do it. It's a lot of work, but if you want to see change happen, you have to become that leader. You have to be that change.
That's interesting because you definitely took the bull by the horn when you did the Women's March. You decided to do something.
Yeah. And in everything else, too, I think mm-hmm. that also applies
yeah.
in parent life, mm-hmm. where I don't necessarily want to do exactly what my parents did. But if I'm trying to raise two human beings, I think I need to be the best example that I can for them mm-hmm. and show them how to respect others in the way they want to be respected. But yeah.
Could you just speak briefly about your experience? Maybe somebody out there might be having the same experience of coming out or dealing with family members who are not accepting them.
I think a thing would be finding community, finding resources within where you can have others who identify like yourself and build a support system. Because I truly believe that community and having support that is not a blood related, you know, other people that aren't your extended family or internal family is very helpful.
Okay. Thanks, Zyra.
Thank you.
Amber?
Well, so I guess that's what I was going to say, actually, was to find your people. I do feel like when I was in high school, I was very lucky to find my people. And in doing that, it lifted me up. And so I think the question is how to do that in Petaluma. You know, we know from the speakers at the Women's March that there's a lack of services for LGBTQ youth in our town. So, you know, they don't have a community center. They have to go to Santa Rosa for that. Right. So how, and even, you know, I saw there was an opportunity recently for youth to participate in LGBTQ leadership activities around sort of Napa and Sonoma County. But there wasn't an option for a representative from Petaluma. It was like Sebastopol, Santa Rosa, Napa, Sonoma. And it just like made me want to cry that we didn't have one from Petaluma. And so, you know, in saying that, like, find your people, I think that the work that we're doing is we want to help the youth mm-hmm. find their people. We want to bring that to Petaluma, or we want to make those connections stronger to the other communities so that they can have those youth can have that same experience that I mean, that's definitely what helped me being sort of young and not understanding how I was different from the people around me.
Wow. Sounds like a project here in Petaluma.
I agree.
Oh, what an honor to get to know both of you.
Is there any email or something, some contact? Yeah. What if somebody wanted to connect with you two with all the work that you're doing and be a part of that?
Sure. So I'm more than happy to give out my email, which is zahyragarcia@gmail.com. That's zahyragarcia@gmail.com. That you can definitely reach out to me anytime.
And then I would add to that, so we both volunteer with the North Bay Organizing Project, and we have a Facebook page for the Petaluma table. So we can also be reached through Facebook Messenger on that account. And it's on Facebook, it's NBOP Petaluma. So that's another way to reach us.
NBOP Petaluma, so two P's in the title.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
So inspiring.
This was fun. I'd like to do it again.
we want everyone, all of our listeners, to remember that, like Amber and Zahyra, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then.
Good night.